This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
I've yet to find my place. I'm guarding 2814. I don't know.
Place to Be Nation Pop. Welcome to yet another edition of the Sellers Points Podcast. That tune you just heard was the amazing Ring Capacity by a band called Kirby Crackle. That song just kicks more and more ass every time I hear it. It makes my little Green Lantern heart just go all a flutter, and I'm sure it has the same effect on my illustrious Ginger Bear co-host, Mr. Kelly Poole. How's that song working for you, buddy?
It's like an anthem for me. So, yeah, I'm a big fan of it. Have been for quite some time.
Yeah, I mean, that song's been around for years, and I mean the band's been around, you know, for a really long time. I encourage people to go and check their stuff out. You can find them on. You can definitely find them on YouTube. I'm pretty sure you can find them on Spotify, some other places as well. You know, buy some of their stuff. It's really, really good. And they don't just do like Green Lantern. They have like all sorts of like comic reference and nerd reference stuff in their music, because that's what they do. But in any case, that's kind of apropos of what we're going to be talking about here today, because this is our first edition of the Speculator Corner segment. And since last week, the last episode about the rebooking of the 2011 Green Lantern film was also our first episode of Rebooked, we decided to keep the Green Lantern thing going for the rest of this month and just say, why don't we take a look at the upcoming Green Lantern Corps film that is still very early in its production process, and kind of talk about some of the stuff we've heard about it, some of the rumors that are floating around out there, some of the ideas that each of us have about what would make this movie good, and you know, we'll hopefully hit on some new ideas throughout the course of the podcast. You never know what's going to happen here. So that said, why don't we just jump right into giving the folks a little background on where we are currently with the Green Lantern Corps film. Now, of course, this is not a sequel to the 2011 Green Lantern movie, because I'm reasonably sure, and I think everybody is reasonably sure, that they have no interest in revisiting that. Yeah, exactly. Kelly, that I can always count on you to sum it up ever so perfectly when it comes to that movie. That right there is all you need to know.
Yeah.
But in any case, they are making a new, or at least they have announced, a new Green Lantern Corps film that will tie into the current, as of right now, the current DC Extended Universe of films, which includes Man of Steel, Batman v Superman, and Suicide Squad, and of course the upcoming Wonder Woman and Justice League, Aquaman, The Flash, The Batman, if all of those movies actually go forward. But we're not here to really say one way or another on those. The info we have about this movie so far is pretty limited. We know that the story is written by Geoff Johns and David Goyer. Geoff Johns, of course, being, I think, everyone's favorite Green Lantern writer. I would hope. Yeah. And David Goyer, of course, is a guy who has a bit of a mixed history, I guess, with comic book film. His credentials, though, are still very, very good. I mean, he is responsible for the Dark Knight trilogy with Christopher Nolan. He helped to make Blade what it was. Like, he wrote the three Blade films, and unfortunately was the director on the third one. So, Andy, yeah, that's what you get when, you know, you let that guy take over the director chair. That's why it's a bad idea. But his writing can be solid when filtered through the lens of certain people like, you know, Christopher Nolan or even Christopher Nolan and Zack Snyder, because he also wrote Man of Steel, and he wrote the one of the treatments of Batman v Superman and its story, but not the final one, which was done by Chris Terrio. But Goyer is working also on the screenplay with a relative newcomer named Justin Rhodes. Now, he doesn't have much work under his belt, only like working on a handful of films at this point. And they're doing the first draft of the screenplay, and my bet is that it likely won't be the last. Now, I have no idea who they might call in to do another pass on the actual screenplay side of it, but as these things tend to go, I think with any big summer tentpole, especially with any of these comic book movies lately, the first draft is never the one they wind up going with. Somebody else always comes in to take another a go at it. So that all that's still up in the air. But Kelly, what did you think whenever you found out that Geoff Johns himself was going to be crafting the story behind this movie?
I felt a lot more confident. I mean, confident that, you know, it's going to be good.
Yeah, he's not just writing, he's also going to be executive producing the movie, which means he's going to have a lot more say-so over this movie than he had over definitely over the 2011 movie, where he had virtually no say in how things were done.
Yeah, that's why, you know, him having more authority and being able to do those things makes me feel more confident that this film will be a more authentic Green Lantern film than what we saw previously.
I'm right there with you. Those were my exact thoughts. I was like, okay, good. Geoff Johns has got his hands directly on this. And that can only be a positive thing, because we'd like to think that the 2011 movie is as bad as it could get. We'd all like to believe that. Of course, I mean, we're a long way from this movie actually coming out. The target date is in 2020, which gives them some time to work. Because, I mean, this is 2017. They got 3 years. Well, probably in terms of, like, when they would like to start filming, I'm sure they'd probably like to start shooting this movie next year, sometime like middle or late next year. And that makes sense considering how much post-production time they're going to need on a movie like this, because it's going to have a metric fuck ton of special and visual effects that have to be added.
Yeah.
But hopefully that does not include a CGI suit on anyone. Yeah, on characters who are not CGI themselves.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe they've learned their lesson on that one. And I feel like they have. I feel like that is something they will move past, so we won't be dealing with any of that insanity of a mocap suit. And maybe even better yet, they'll have a full story and script ready to go by the time they get to casting. But that's another topic for a little bit later. Now, they haven't named a director yet. But, of course, the rumor mill on this one kicked in a while back. I was looking up some stuff earlier today just to remind myself of how long ago people started talking about this one. And like almost a year ago, back in April of 2016, the first rumored director came about of this movie. And of course, that name was George Miller. Now, everybody remembers George Miller. He did a fantastic job on Mad Max Fury Road. And his name is like on the tips of everybody's tongue after that. It was a big movie. It was a great, like, kind of come out of nowhere revival of Mad Max that, you know, nobody expected. And yes, it is an incredible film. I absolutely love it. But just because he hits it out of the park with another Mad Max movie, considering, yes, he was responsible for all the ones that came before, a lot of people think that he's automatically the best fit. for like everything, because man, every time one of these new DCEU movies gets announced and they don't have a director attached, his name comes up, whether he's actually in contention or not. And some of that goes back to Mad Max, but some of it also goes back to him being the director of the scuttled Justice League Mortal, which was going to also star Armie Hammer as Batman, and a whole, and Common as John Stewart. So that movie was originally slated to come out in 2013, the same year that Man of Steel came out, but during the process of filming Man of Steel, they decided that that would be the kickoff to their new interconnected universe, and they didn't want a separate Justice League, which would have featured like a different Superman and Wonder Woman and all that. So they were like, well, we'll scrap that altogether. And then George went on to make Mad Max Fury Road. But that said, I don't feel like he would be the best fit for Green Lantern. And I feel like his name only keeps coming up because of the whole Justice League movie and because of Mad Max Fury Road, because he's on the at the forefront of everybody's minds.
Yeah.
But he's not the guy that I think would be a good fit for the director chair. Now, they haven't said, nobody has said anything about directors, like nothing serious anyway. Nobody's even mentioned that as a possible, like who could possibly be up there other than that one George Miller thing. But he's also been rumored for Man of Steel 2. He's also rumored to be on the short list to replace Ben Affleck as the director of the Batman. And he's everywhere, and he can't do all of these jobs. So
no, that's burnout.
Yeah, he's not a good fit for all of that, honestly. But I digress. I feel like the thing that they need to do first is get a story in place. Get a solid story, script, and have that at least mostly done before they even get into like who they want to be director and who they want to cast. Now, Caleb, what we heard about this movie was that what we understand from the story is that they're calling it a lethal weapon in space.
Yeah. So they're that's what I heard too.
So in my mind that says, okay, well, if they're doing Lethal Weapon, that means it's going to be a buddy cop action movie set in space. So, how do you think that should work, Kelly? What kind of dynamic would you like to see? And should they go for older Hal, younger John, or older John, younger Hal?
That's both are viable. I, you know, when it comes down to wanting to see like a, if, you know, this Green Lantern Corps film or however they're, you know, I would like to see both of them kind of, you know, like Hal be a little bit older and maybe, you know, John be a little bit younger. But, you know, at the same time, you know, I want to see John like you, we see him in the cartoons. You know, I want to see the John Stewart that, you know, we all came to accept and kind of just get to see on the big, on the small screen when he was in the Justice League cartoon, you know, cause they replaced Hal with him and that kind of made some people a little irritated, but I was like, he's a Green Lantern. You know, it's John Stewart. I mean, the guy's, you know, he's military trained. He's got, you know, architectural skills. I mean, he's got a lot of things that I want to see them bring that to the big screen, you know, and when it comes to age and stuff like that, I don't really think it's that big a deal. I mean, yeah, I would like to see, I want to see a mature Hal, not so much maybe, you know, someone that's older, but just someone that is mature in some aspects. But again, you know, Hal's also a character that's not, the one thing I like about him above all the other heroes in DC is that he's the one that's willing to say, okay, screw you. I'm doing what I want to do. And this is how we're going to do it. And whatever, you know, yeah. You go plans. You go make your plans, Bruce. I don't give a shit. I'm going to go right in and start knocking the hell out of these folks. And that's what I love about him. And you know, on the other side, you have John, who's a little bit more like Bruce. It's like, okay, we need to think this through. We're not just going to go in guns blazing. And, you know, those two aspects would, you know, you could do a lot with that in film. You could play off the two types of, I mean, Bruce is, I mean, not, Hal's a lot more, you know, kind of reckless when it comes to, he doesn't have, I mean, he's like, we both agreed, he's not leadership material. Now, can he inspire himself as a kind of a leader? I mean, he can, but he's not, you know, he's just,
he's not the big decision guy.
No, he's not. But I mean, when it's ready to rally the troops and get everyone motivated to go kick some ass, he's the guy to do it. And,
good field commander.
Yeah. Yeah. And John makes a very good, just overall leader. You know, he can inspire people too, but I mean, he has the ability to lead and delegate and relegate because he was in the military and he knows how this, you know, structure works and how you need to really command folks and do it in a way that, you know, it's not going to get people hurt too quickly, you know, or, you know, it's not reckless.
Yeah, I absolutely see it a lot like that. I think that like John Stewart's a big picture guy. He sees all the inner workings, all the, you know, the forward thinking, all the inner facets of how things are put together. Because I mean, he was an architect, so of course he's going to see things like that. Hal is, like you said, that more gung ho, straight ahead. You know, he's the run and gun kind of guy. To put it in Lethal Weapon terms, Hal Jordan is absolutely Martin Riggs, and John Stewart is for sure Roger Murtaugh. I kind of dig the idea of maybe flipping the script a little bit and having the veteran be Riggs, like have a veteran Riggs trying to train up a rookie Roger Murtaugh, a by the book rookie. You know,
right?
Like flipping that whole scenario on its head, which would make for some very natural comedy. And you absolutely have to have that in a Green Lantern Corps movie or in a Green Lantern movie, period. It can't just be, you know, straight up action and drama all the time. Yes, that needs to be there, and it needs to be maybe the primary focus of the film. But there's got to be that levity in there, and having an odd couple buddy cop thing going on would for sure bring that out.
So yeah, that's
what I'm hoping to see.
Now, I agree. I agree with that. I want to see a very, you know, like you said, kind of a buddy cop, and that's really a good way to kind of get it to people. You know, Lethal Weapon in space to an extent. I mean,
Lethal Weapon meets Star Wars.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that would, that good combo would work. Now, of course, they're going to be coming up with their own original story for this that has to tie into the larger DCEU. Or maybe it doesn't. Maybe they could pull a Guardians of the Galaxy and just have this, like, yes, it does exist within that universe, but it occurs over here in its own little corner and isn't really affected by them all that much.
Right.
And that's worked out really well for Guardians, so why couldn't it work for Green Lantern?
Yeah.
Now, but that said, what comic stories do you think would be good to pull from? Not directly adapt or anything, but just to have pieces of, and maybe to give nods to the fans out there.
You know, I know that we didn't the Green Lantern animated movie that came out. I think a little. Did it come out before or after the film?
If you're talking about First Flight, that one came out before, and it really rushed through a whole lot of stuff all at once.
What I would like to see is something that's kind of, that will kind of, you know, not so much like a story per se, you know, let's pull or, I would like to see aspects of the DC cosmic universe. You know, I would really like to see that showcased, kind of like the way Guardians kind of did it with their film. I mean, I think Green Lantern itself kind of lends itself to something like a Guardians of the Galaxy film, where, you know, we're going to get to see, you know, different aspects of, you know, the DC cosmic side of their universe. And I mean, maybe have something with like Kanjar Roe and, you know, introduce him and slavery or pirates or whatever, you know, where you're really going to have to go after, you know, the bad guys and where you can kind of display, a lot of the different things that, you know, are going on in the DC cosmic universe. I mean, I'd like to see something not, you know, you could do a very simplistic story and it just really, you know, have a lot of meaning to it. You don't have to go in and the reason I'm saying that is because, you know, they tried so much to do in the Green Lantern film. I want to see the exact opposite in this film. I'd like to see a little, you know, them kind of pull back and not try to just throw us completely into the, you know, try to do everything at once, but they could set the groundwork, you know, for another Green Lantern film or I mean, like just kind of like the way Guardians did. I mean, they did a very, you know, now mind you, their movie is kind of interconnected with the rest of their films, but in and of itself, I mean, it told a really good story about this ragtag group of, you know, malcontents. And I don't know, I'd kind of like to just see something kind of on a simpler term, just a simple story for, you know, the Green Lantern Corps movie.
I would too. I think that simple is the way to go. Like, as straightforward, and even though I hate to use the term, at this point, with where the DCEU is, like, they've tried to be overly complex, and it hasn't really worked in their favor up to this point. So I would say, let's not do that. Let's go for a much simpler, more straightforward story, and build towards the more complex. So I like the idea of opening up the cosmic side of the DCU for the films, and Green Lantern is absolutely the key to doing that. And you could totally have cameos from different alien races. Like I would love to see a Thanagarian make an appearance. I think that would be, you know, not in any kind of named role at all. Just acknowledging that this exists.
You could do so much, and at the same time, you could do so much without it being, you know, overbearing or over. I mean, just too much information at once. You could just subtly do things that, you know, like you were saying, we just kind of slowly just kind of introduce the universe basically to the audience.
Well, it's like in Star Wars, and both. Like, even in the most recent Star Wars, in The Force Awakens, you know, you have that bar scene where you see all these different types of aliens standing around. Yeah, throw a scene like that in there and then fill it with DC Easter eggs. You don't have to name any of those characters all. You don't have to spend any time with them. Just throw them in there as Easter eggs and just say, look at all this stuff that exists. Guardians did that. Guardians did it on the where the Nova Corps is stationed. Hundreds of different types of aliens out there, and even in the prison scene as well, like you see like little Marvel Easter eggs thrown about. Like, there you go, just do that. You don't have to name any of those characters. You don't have to spend any time whatsoever. Just put them in there as, you know, nods to this exists and there is possibility for the future, and who knows which one you're going to follow. But for my money, the simpler the better for them in this particular case. And I think that the comic to pull from, and this may be a little controversial, but I think they need to go back to Secret Origin and adapt that a little bit for Jon Stewart.
Mm-hmm.
Not make him a test pilot, of course. He's a Marine. He needs to be pulled away, pulled into the Green Lantern Corps. I don't know. I'm going to spitball this. Let's say he's no longer in the Marine Corps. Like, this is after he's out. He used, his time as, maybe using the GI Bill or something to go to college, get his architecture degree. And now he wants to go back into Afghanistan as a private contractor, using his military contacts to help rebuild some of the stuff that they destroyed as part of the military.
Yeah.
And winds up again in a dangerous situation there in a firefight, and winds up getting picked to be Hal Jordan's new sector partner because he overcomes fear and throws himself into a dangerous situation completely unarmed to save somebody. Like, there you go. There's your opening for why Jon Stewart would be selected to be a member of the Green Lantern Corps.
Right.
I don't know if that's a good opening scene, but I would think that would probably be a good scene in the film. And that's just something that I think would work.
Yeah.
But when it comes to crafting those scenes, you gotta pick the right director. And yeah. I think we saw in 2011 that, yeah, Martin Campbell, he had a lot of hype around him because of his two reboots of James Bond, being GoldenEye and Casino Royale, a really good Zorro movie with Antonio Banderas called The Mask of Zorro. And despite being a good action director, he pretty much screwed the pooch on that one. Because action, yes. Sci-fi, not so much. That's not his wheelhouse. So I looked around, and Kelly, I know that director names are not really so much your thing, but I got a few I want to throw out there to you, and I want to get your opinion.
Okay.
And see what you think about this. And maybe we'll hit on somebody that would work for you. My first pick is a guy who may not actually be available to do it because of another DCEU project, but his name is Doug Liman. He was the director of the first Bourne movie, The Bourne Identity, and he also directed the Tom Cruise action sci-fi Groundhog Day mashup Edge of Tomorrow. And he's currently set to do Justice League Dark for the DCEU, but I'm actually starting to think that movie isn't going to wind up happening. Mostly because they put out a DC animated movie of the same name using the same lineup that the live action movie was supposed to be using, and told a story that essentially sounded a lot like the rumored Justice League Dark live action screenplay. So
yeah.
I was starting to think maybe they decided to shift gears and just put Justice League Dark as an animated film, which personally I feel like works a little better, at least right now. But it was, and I actually watched that movie over the weekend, and I got to say, it was really good. And this is kind of my little mini review of that film. If you enjoyed Matt Ryan as Constantine on the NBC show, he's back doing the voice of that character again in the Justice League Dark animated movie. He does it really well. He basically is that character. He owns it. So I encourage people to go check that out. But anyway, back to Doug Liman. His work on The Bourne Identity shows that he has good action sensibilities. And Edge of Tomorrow was one of the most entertaining and just funny and exciting movies of 2014. And I know some people don't like Tom Cruise. Fair enough. I can't defend him as a person, but I think that his body of work is actually very strong. And Edge of Tomorrow was very against type for him. He is not the straight-up action hero right at the beginning. He's very different, and he shows some comedy chops that I think people forget that he has. But we'll discuss Tom Cruise a little bit later. But, Kelly, what do you think? Doug Liman. I know you've probably seen Bourne Identity, and I think you've seen Edge of Tomorrow. You think maybe he could pull that off? Could he do Green Lantern Corps?
Yeah, I think he probably could, you know. You know, what you've said, I mean, you know, like you said a minute ago, you know more about these directors and you, you know, I think you're more of a movie buff when it comes to those aspects as far as directors and writers and things like that. And I'm not so much that. So, you know, when it comes to suggestions and things like that, I will, you know, from what you said, I think he could do it. You know, I mean,
he would be my number one pick, my number one draft pick. He's also got history with working with Warner Brothers. I mean, Edge of Tomorrow was a WB film. So I feel like he's got history working with the studio. They know each other really well, and he'd just be a natural fit.
But yeah,
but there are other names out there that should also be considered. One other one that I'd like to bring up. Is Justin Lin. Now, some folks might be like, you know, not they may not be familiar with that name right off, but he's one of the guys that's kind of responsible for shifting the Fast and Furious movies from being about street racer punk gangsters to being more of an action movie franchise. He was the director of Fast 5 and 6, and more recently, he directed Star Trek Beyond, which, of course, stars Chris Pine, who is pretty high on most people's list to be Hal Jordan. Now, as of right now, Lin is set to be working on a Space Jam sequel, but they've not announced a date on that one or on an announced Hot Wheels movie and supposedly a Bourne Legacy sequel. But all of that could easily be put on the back burner because all of those movies have been in development hell for some time. Longer dates, some longer than others. But I don't think anybody's, like, I mean, other than Space Jam, which I've seen like 90s, like grown-up 90s kids like really clamoring for, I don't think anybody's really all that high on a Hot Wheels or a Bourne Legacy movie. So yeah. I don't feel like that's something that he couldn't easily walk away from, especially for a higher paycheck on a Green Lantern Corps film. And of course, Star Trek Beyond was a hell of a lot of fun. That movie was one of my personal favorites from last year. I thought it was a great summertime sci-fi flick that actually felt like kind of old school Star Trek, honestly. But with some, you know, with that modern aesthetic that they established back in 2009. It was the most fun that I'd had watching that crew since the 2009 movie. But it wasn't just, you know, about the action and the big set pieces. He showed real, you know, care in handling some of the more intimate character moments, and knew how to pair up his actors and get good performances out of them. So, he'd be another one that's kind of high on my list to take that on if he's not going to wind up doing more Star Trek or be like tied down with other things. But so far that does not appear to be on his plate. Now, Kelly, what did you think of Star Trek Beyond? Do you think that was a pretty good flick?
Yeah. I mean, I liked it. It was fun. Did it have some, maybe some issues, story-wise, that I, you know, question after the fact. But, I mean, as far as just, you know, you can go in and be a stickler about things and as a, you know, as a Star Trek fan or a Star Wars fan, you know, very passionate about those two franchises. And I'm pretty passionate about both of them, too. But at the same time, you know, when there's things in the story that, you know, you're kind of like, wait a minute, okay, I'm just going to let it slide. This has been pretty fun. I'm going to go ahead. You know, you can kind of do that. And I did that with Star Trek Beyond. I mean, the cast is great. I mean, you know, when you have a lot of good things going on, you can kind of let certain story plots kind of, or plot holes kind of just kind of let it go. Yeah, you can nitpick it later, but I did enjoy it, and I thought it was, you know, just a good film. I mean, a fun film, you know. I mean, there's, the entertainment value was there. I mean, I came out and I had been entertained, and so, you know, I enjoyed it.
I agree. It's one of those, it's like, yeah, switch the brain off for a little while, grab the popcorn and strap in. It's going to be a fun ride.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's that, and that cast just kind of makes it. Cause I mean, they've done this long enough now that they've all got good rapport with each other. That mm-hmm. chemistry is just all there. And I mean, Chris Pine he killed it in that movie for me. Like, he absolutely nailed it. And I feel like that movie is a prime example of why a lot of us would love for him to be Hal Jordan. Because he just seems to embody the character. But, yeah. And with Justin Lin on board, that might actually be closer to being a reality. But, you know, but I digress. We'll get to that later. We'll get the casting side of things in the second half. But for now, we've got to move on to the next potential director. I say potential because I'm just spitballing who my personal wish list would be. And that would be Brad Bird, the writer and director of The Incredibles and its upcoming sequel, as well as Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. And that Incredibles sequel is set to be released next year, which would mean that he would kind of be open. Like, he's not going to have as much on his plate, which he doesn't seem to take on movies lightly. Brad Bird is a guy that doesn't seem to, like, you know, have a whole bunch of movies lined up that he's going to direct. He seems very selective of what it is he's going to do. And he's also one of my top guys that I'd love to see direct a Man of Steel sequel. But him helming Green Lantern Corps would automatically put it on another level. He's got experience handling a large cast of characters and giving us their backstories through the course of a single film, like The Incredibles. He knows how to balance humor and action, and not just in animation. I mean, Ghost Protocol, for a lot of people, is the best Mission Impossible film that's been made. And there's certainly a case for that. And a film like Green Lantern Corps, I think, needs a guiding hand who can maintain that balance, because that's a lot of what's going to make the movie work, is being able to balance all those characters' stories, their chemistry with each other, making you care about them, but also, you know, being able to keep the plot focused and moving forward. So, Kelly, what are your thoughts on movies like The Incredibles or Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol? What do you think of those?
I enjoy The Incredibles. That's, you know, just a really fun film and pretty, you know, pretty just on the money. You know, there wasn't any moment where I was like, kind of out of, no, this kept me entertained the entire way through. I didn't pop out at all. Now, as far as the Mission Impossible films, you know, I went and saw the very first one with Tom Cruise, and I mean, he's been in all of them since then, but just, I'm not a fan of those films, and it's not really him. It's just, that kind of spy genre, you know, it's like, you know, James Bond's a little different. I mean, I've enjoyed those films over the years, but just the Mission Impossible, when they brought that franchise to the big screen, I saw it and I was like, this is, it's kind of neat. And I think I saw the second one too, but it kind of stopped doing anything for me. And so I just didn't see the rest of them. But I know I've heard a lot of good things about them. I know that they, you know, and I'm not a fan of Tom Cruise either. I don't dislike the guy. I think you're right. He is a good actor. He really puts himself completely into a part, does a lot of his own stunts. And I always, you know, the actors who really get in there and they do as much as they can and they do the stunt. I mean, I give props to them. You know, these guys, I mean, they put themselves in danger for our entertainment. And, you know, Tom Cruise is, I mean, I just never have clicked with him as an actor. You know, I've seen a lot of his films and you know, Top Gun and Legends and things like that. And they're good films and I enjoy them. But it's like Leonardo DiCaprio. I don't click with him, you know, and he's been in a lot of great films and Inception was great. But you know, it's not him that draws me to the film. It's probably the content of the film that gets me in, you know, he's just part of it, you know? So,
and, yeah, there are actors. I think everybody's got an actor like that, that they can acknowledge the talent, but they just don't care for the stuff they do.
Yeah.
And, you know, I look at the Mission Impossible films and I'm like, I really like what Brad Bird did. And, I hate that he only did that one, but Ghost Protocol for me, I think probably is the best of the series. It's just a straight up great action movie. But I love his thoughts on like crafting story, and filling them with characters that you connect with, because that's the most important thing, is that you connect with the character. And I feel like if you're going to make people connect with a Green Lantern, movie, you're going to need to make them feel like they can see themselves in the characters, and you need a director who can do that, who can like get you invested in characters that you know basically nothing about when you come into the film. Mm-hmm. And that actually is a good segue into my next pick, a guy named Ruben Fleischer, who was the director of Zombieland and the not quite as good Gangster Squad. But he's actually on the short list of potential Batman directors, and with the talks seemingly stalled or breaking down with Matt Reeves, there is the possibility that maybe he's suddenly a front runner there. But if not, he'd be another guy I think would be a good choice for Green Lantern Corps, because he has the ability to handle that buddy movie formula like he did with Zombieland. That was a buddy film all the way, you know, with Jesse Eisenberg and, I hate it when people's names slip my mind. Woody Harrelson. He really did a great job getting those performances out of those two actors and just making that work. Like, you didn't know anything about them, but over the course of the movie, through the things they did, the way they interacted with each other, you had an older, unhinged mentor trying to build up a younger, you know, more by the book, in Jesse Eisenberg's case, fraidy cat, which wouldn't be at all John Stewart. He would not be afraid of anything, but you kind of get the point. You know, it's the older mentor, the younger, the older crazy mentor with a more by the book mentee. So, that's why I think, okay, well, he gets those character beats. He could totally do something like that. Now, the big question mark is, can he handle something like a big budget sci-fi film, like with a lot of visual effects involved? Now, if he's got a good studio behind him, maybe he wouldn't necessarily have to worry too much about that. But with Green Lantern, there's going to be a lot of green screen work. Or maybe blue screen in this case, since they'll probably be wearing green uniforms. But, you know, he's a name that I think should be at least considered. But what did you think of Zombieland? Did that one work for you?
Oh, yeah. Zombieland was awesome. I mean, that's probably one of my, you know, favorite zombie films as far as just overall entertainment. I mean, definitely took a kind of a different path than a lot of your typical zombie films that, you know, it's a lot of the same that comes out when it comes to zombie films. And, you know, you can only, you know, you put the archetypes together. Okay, we're trapped. We have to, you know, get past the zombies, and we have, you know, you do that so often it kind of becomes old. But Zombieland came along and kind of it was kind of a comedy, but you know, there was that whole, you know, threat of zombies out there and you know, the dialogue between all the characters and you know, Bill Murray's appearance in it. I mean, it really had a unique kind of feel. And I mean, it's one of those films I think I went to the theater and saw it again, which is very rare for me. Some other friends hadn't seen it, so I was like, yeah, I'll see it again. Love, you know, it was great. So I enjoyed it. It definitely, to me, like I said, it's one of those zombie films that's not cut from the same cloth as all the others. And, you know, it's not like a Resident Evil or, you know, a remake of one of Romero's, you know, zombie films. Just kind of has its own unique kind of place, which is nice. It's nice to see those from time to time.
I'm right there with you. Like I liked that it was subversive to the zombie genre before we even knew that we needed that genre to be subverted. And
yeah,
man, it would be really great if we could get that sequel out there. And of course, he said that there's going to be a sequel, but we haven't seen like a ton of movement on it. So still waiting on something like that to happen. Hopefully it does. But in the meantime, I figure he might actually be pretty good at, or he could be good at a Green Lantern Corps movie. I would think they would probably be dependent on who he surrounds himself with.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, Gangster Squad being what it was more of a problem in the writing department because honestly, the script was not strong. Put that at the feet of Will Beall, and he should never be allowed to write anything at all. That's just my feelings on that guy. Unfortunately, he is the writer on the Aquaman movie that's coming up, but hopefully the cast is strong enough to pull something good out of what they've got there, and the director, James Wan, will doctor up some of the dialogue if it's just a little too over the top or like a little too straight cheese. But one more name before we go to break that I want to throw out there is a name that I'm actually not as familiar with myself, but I feel like he's got some street cred, if you will, and that's a guy named Joe Cornish. If that name doesn't ring a bell, maybe the name of the movie Attack the Block will. That movie has enjoyed a good, like, strong cult status lately. It's a British sci-fi action comedy directed by Joe Cornish. And it's kind of responsible for us having John Boyega in the Star Wars films because this was the movie he did before Star Wars came calling. And if you guys are also familiar with the TV show Legends of Tomorrow, Franz Drama, who plays Jefferson, or Jackson, if you will, is also in Attack the Block. And it's, from what I've seen of it, it's, you know, it's pretty good. It's fast-paced, good sci-fi action comedy, and it was produced by the same people who did Shaun of the Dead. And just seeing how Joe frames his scenes and the way that he has his characters interact with each other, he's got a knack for that kind of genre and for balancing, and that's a key word we've been saying a lot lately, balancing a lot of important characters all at once, because he's got four lead characters in the film. So, or five lead characters actually in the film. So he's dealing with a large cast and trying to make you care about each one of them as the movie goes along. Now, I could see him making Green Lantern Corps work, at least in that aspect. And I even think that one of the actors in Attack the Block might be a good choice for John Stewart. And if that were to be the case, having a history with your director is always a big plus. And Attack the Block has gotten a lot of attention over the last couple of years, mainly because John Boyega came out of that film and is now playing Finn on Star Wars The Force Awakens and will be reprising that role in The Last Jedi. And we presume in Episode 9, whatever that is, that will be titled. So, Kelly, that's all the information I really have on Joe Cornish. But what do you think about the idea of a virtual unknown director taking on this movie? Would that be something that you think that would be worth taking a chance on? Or maybe should they go for a named director, somebody with a little bit more experience?
I think, you know, every director, you know, at some point, I mean, a new director that hasn't really done anything, they need their break. You know, they need a shot at trying, you know, trying to do, you know, a job like something like this. And I wouldn't see it being a problem. You know, I mean, it sometimes you have to kind of take a chance. A lot of times movies are done, you know, in a certain way. And the movie, you know, the companies themselves, you know, they may not want, they want a sure thing. I mean, they want their money to come back and they want to make money on it. So they're not as, you know, they want to go with whoever has made money for them in the past or whoever's made money for, you know, that's a, you know, that does a good job and they get results. So it, you know, I would love for, you know, this individual to maybe give it a shot and have a chance at it. But I don't know if the, you know, if Warner Brothers is willing to take that chance, because they, you know, they haven't had the best track record when it comes to their movie verse. They've had a lot of hit and misses, and, you know, they have not, they haven't garnered the love that the Marvel movies have brought to the Marvel fans. And, I think overall, I think, you know, directing this film, it's definitely something that they're going to be looking at. They want, you know, they want to hit that mark.
It's a very good point that after the debacle that was the last Green Lantern film, if they're going to do that again, you know, try and reboot a franchise that has yet to bring them any success, then it makes more sense to go with a named director and go with somebody who's got the experience under their belt and somebody who's got a proven track record of hit films. And that would be the biggest strike against Joe Cornish. Even though his one movie is popular, it's not blockbuster mega hit popular. And
yeah,
when it comes to Warner Brothers and they're going to be like pumping money into this movie, they're going to be saying, we need somebody who's got big returns. And that, I think, is probably going to be forefront in their mind. They want somebody who's got that proven track record of making big money for other studios. And especially if it's somebody who's made money for them in the past, I think that actually would give whoever the individual is even more clout in the negotiating process. But with that said, that brings us to the end of the first half of our look at the Green Lantern Corps movie. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk about casting this sumbitch. We're going to say who we think should be playing Hal, who should be playing John, and then who should be playing the film's likely villain, Sinestro. And I'm going to hit you guys with a controversial, somewhat unique, and maybe a little attitudinal theory on how we could potentially get Chris Pine playing Hal Jordan, despite the fact that he is also playing Steve Trevor in the upcoming Wonder Woman film. So you'll want to come back for that too, and we will see you right after this.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I just want to make sure you're all subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Now, it's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search for and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Feed, Place to Be Nation Pop Feed, Pro Wrestling Only Feed, and, of course, the Kevin Kelly Show Feed, which includes the full archives of my podcast. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And of course, as always, enjoy all the great action of Ring of Honor Wrestling and everything presented to you on PlaceToBeNation.com.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com, and we offer them to you across two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast with our famous vintage wall pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with the smash hit Clotheslines and Headlines, our steady veteran main event, and the beloved monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on all pro wrestling super shows. Relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the always contentious Dangerous Alliance podcast, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. On our very popular Place of the Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, NBA Team, Lucha Undead, Geek and Sassy, and a veritable podcast heaven for comic fans with hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both of those feeds on iTunes and rate and leave feedback for us as well. All of these shows plus others available at PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on the right-hand side of our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
The PWO PTBN feed has changed its name, now known simply as Pro Wrestling Only, so it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
By authority of the mystic guardians of the universe, on the far distant planet Oa, Hal Jordan, test pilot, becomes the Green Lantern, a cosmic crusader whose magical power ring at his bidding accomplishes the impossible. In his continuing fight against interplanetary evil, Green Lantern, Guardian of the Galaxy.
Welcome back to the second half of our Speculator Corner on the upcoming Green Lantern Corps film. We're glad that you guys came back for the second half, and hope you liked hearing us prattle on about where we think that story should go and what directors we think would make good fits. But this is the part of the show we know you've all been waiting for. Who should play these characters? Now, before we get to that, though, there was a little list that came out maybe a couple, 3 or 4 weeks back from our our favorite rumor monger and yours, Mr. Humberto Gonzalez, everybody's favorite guy. And he dropped a list of names of potential casting for Hal Jordan. And those names included, and Kelly, I don't know, did you see, before we get to that, Kelly, did you see this list?
I may have. I'm trying to recall.
It is, I'm going to go down the list. I'm just going to read these off. And I'm going to preface it by saying this list is totally bullshit. As in, it's not real. The names are Tom Cruise, Jake Gyllenhaal, Armie Hammer, Bradley Cooper, Joel McHale, and Ryan Reynolds. Now, if that list doesn't make your eye twitch or raise an eyebrow raise, let me just say that last name that's on this list again. Ryan Reynolds. Now, that's not to say that I have anything against Ryan at all. I don't. You guys listened to the last episode. You guys know that we're actually kind of rooting for him when it came to the Green Lantern film. But he has said in no uncertain terms he has no intentions of ever coming back to Green Lantern. And why would he? He's got Deadpool. Much more successful franchise for him. He has no reason to ever come back and do Green Lantern again. Not when he can ride that money train all the way to the bank. And nor should he. And besides, if Warner Brothers is looking to distance themselves from the previous Green Lantern film and do something new, they're not going to call up the guy who was in the last one. Because then people would be like, no. Oh, it's totally a sequel. No, it isn't. So, let's look at some of this. The thing is, some of these names on here, I don't hate these people. Only one of these names is just so outrageous, just, you know, a personal irking. I don't want Armie Hammer anywhere near this movie because I feel like he's just a gigantic block of wood with zero acting ability that doesn't come off as completely forced. And I don't care what movie it is, Man from U.N.C.L.E., Mirror, Mirror, The Social Network, which was the only time he even came close to a good performance. I don't care what his look is, he's not going to be able to pull this off. Tom Cruise, I think, could conceivably pull it off, but should not be on the list of consideration for a myriad of reasons, mostly because I feel like it would drive more people away than it would bring in. Bradley Cooper, I like that name. But he was rumored before. In fact, Tom Cruise, Jake Gyllenhaal, Ryan Reynolds, Bradley Cooper have all been rumored for Green Lantern before now, back in 2009, because this list is virtually a copy of it. With only Armie Hammer and Joel McHale, of all people. Now, that's just weird. I'm sorry, but...
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
Joel McHale, the guy from Community. He's a comedian, folks. He has no experience doing anything like this, and on top of that, he is in his mid-40s, and he's not in this kind of shape, and getting in that kind of shape at this point for a guy who probably never has been in his life would be a hell of a thing. So. And let's just take a step back and just realize that this list is straight bullshit. There is no truth to this. Umberto, you're losing your touch, bro. You're losing your touch. Like you're just copy pasting at this point, man. That, come on. I expect better. You know. I may not like you as a human being. I may think that you're part of the problem when it comes to people's expectations and their views of these films before they ever come out. But at least before you had some imagination. This right here just seems like you're bored. And if that's... I mean, I don't blame you if that's the case. It seems like it would get boring after a little while. But, you know, instead of throwing this bullshit out there, maybe hang it up. Maybe do that. There are other people out there who will take your place. In fact, I'm pretty sure that we get rid of you, we'll have two more people just like you come along. And that's anyway, I could get on that soapbox all day. But so that list sounds like bullshit to me, Kelly.
Yeah, that list there's something wrong with that list. Everything about it is wrong.
Yeah, let's... Woof. But I think I got a better one. So let's throw this out there. First up is my all-time number one draft pick for Hal Jordan, and he's been my guy for a long time. People who know me have heard me make this argument before. Kelly is probably sick of hearing it at this point. But Jensen Ackles, who plays Dean Winchester on Supernatural, is the ideal embodiment of Hal Jordan to me. He's brash, he's charming, hilarious, and intense. He's singularly focused when he needs to be and capable of some absolutely brutal action, too. He's the only thing keeping Supernatural from becoming absolutely unwatchable at this point. And it's time for him to break away from that move and move on to greener pastures, if you will.
Yeah.
So he is my number one pick to be Hal Jordan. And I know some Supernatural fans out there who would probably agree with me that he would make a good choice for this, even if they don't know anything about Green Lantern. But Kelly, have you seen Jensen Ackles on Supernatural? Have you watched that show very much? And what do you think about him as a potential?
I've seen a few seasons of it. I hadn't followed it like you or probably, you know, folks that are really into that show. It's not that I don't dislike it. It's just, again, to me, Supernatural, you know, it's just something I just don't get into. But I watched enough of it, though. The actors on there are dead on. I mean, you're right. He's a good pick. He's got all of the, all of the things needed to kind of pull off being Hal Jordan, you know, like you said, you named off all of the qualities and he does, he has those. And I think that he has the acting chops to pull that off and to be Hal. And I think that it would be a good move for him if he, you know, to move from Supernatural into, you know, doing Green Lantern.
It would make me so happy. And our good friend Miranda might immediately become a big Green Lantern fan because she's right there with me on, you know, watching Supernatural every week.
Yeah.
Because hashtag Green Lantern's Green Lantern's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, he is absolutely my top pick. He is my guy. Now, there are other people out there, and I'm going to go back and look at that BS list. And I'm going to go ahead and say it, because I alluded to it just a minute ago, but Bradley Cooper would actually be the main one on there that I think would work best because he is a bit older, a bit wiser. He's gotten a lot more acting experience under his belt since the last time he was rumored for Green Lantern, but he still has that suaveness. You know, he can be suave. Some people might mistake it for arrogance, but no, it's like pure charm. You can't help but like the guy. He's got great comedic timing, and we've all seen, and he can handle a heavy action movie. Like, we've seen him do heavy action. We've seen him do some serious movies, too. He did that movie American Sniper, which was a very heavy, emotional film. And he carried it on his shoulders. He doesn't have much of a sci-fi background outside of Guardians of the Galaxy, where he does the voice of Rocket Raccoon. But I think that it wouldn't take much for him to be able to just step into this role. But in the end, though, he's likely not actually on the table at all. Because when it comes to the Marvel films, even though he's only doing the voice of Rocket Raccoon, there is likely a no-compete clause in his Marvel contract, which states he cannot go and do a DC Extended Universe movie. So that probably immediately removes him from contention. Which is unfortunate because I think that he actually would be a good choice for Hal Jordan. Kelly, what do you think of Bradley Cooper? Do you think that if he were to have actually been on the table, what would you think of him as a slightly older, more experienced Hal Jordan?
I think he'd be a good pick. I think, like you said, he's got the versatility in his in his actor's toolkit of being able to do, you know, serious and have moments of, you know, humor, can carry all of those things around. And like, you know, having that versatility as an actor, you know, not a lot of actors have that ability to kind of bounce in between those two and do well in both. And I think Bradley'd be fine. I think he'd do a good job.
Yeah, he would be fantastic if it were possible. But due to the whole Marvel thing, I think that's probably not.
Yeah.
But another actor that WB might want to consider, and this one's going to be kind of an in case pick, just in case they are going for a Hal Jordan who's a little bit younger. Maybe they want to make John and Hal the same age. They want them to be younger guys who can kind of grow into the roles, which probably isn't necessarily the way they're going. But anyway, there's a guy who's on the Amazon Prime original, The Man in the High Castle. His name is Luke Kleintank. And he plays a character named John Blake on that show. And he's shown some solid ability throughout that show. He's got a little bit of a smart-ass tendency, but he's also like more of a dramatic actor, too. Like he puts on like that kind of bravado that Hal would need to display, but he's also very driven. Like he seems like very focused. He's got that quiet intensity that Hal sometimes has. And he's got the look, he's got the build. I could absolutely see this guy being a younger Hal Jordan. And in fact, whenever I watch the show, I keep thinking this kid is kind of like a slightly less womanizing younger Hal Jordan. But I see the versatility there. I see a lot of potential in him. So if they were to go younger with Hal, this is a guy I think they should give serious consideration to. Kelly, I don't know if you've even seen that show. Have you?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, it's one that's not on a lot of people's radar right now. Maybe because a lot of people don't have Amazon Prime or they haven't paid attention to some of the original stuff there. But I would encourage people to go watch The Man in the High Castle. It's a fantastically done alt history show that takes a look at America in the 1960s if the Axis powers had won World War II. If the Nazis and the Japanese had split control of the United States. And it's also got a bit of a sci-fi element to it as well, because there are propaganda films floating around that show footage from the end of World War II as we actually know it, basically showing the Allies winning World War II, which looks like an alternate universe to people living in that world. So it's pretty cool stuff, and it's incredibly well acted. So I encourage people to check that out if you've got Amazon Prime. And the last one on my list actually comes from that other list that got thrown out there, because, well, when you really think about it, Jake Gyllenhaal might actually be a pretty good choice for a slightly older Hal Jordan. When you stop and look at his credentials, look at all the stuff he's done, and he's old enough now, like he's a veteran actor. He's been around for a good while. And is a very powerful actor whenever he has to be. It was mentioned on a recent episode of the Hard Traveling Fanboys whenever they were going over this list that Prisoners is a very, very good movie. I'd like to co-sign that. It's a hell of a performance from Gyllenhaal in that movie. And, of course, he was really great in Zodiac, which is a fantastic film about the Zodiac Killer. So I encourage people to check both of those films out. Now, the only thing that could be a strike against him is that he has a fairly busy schedule. And he also tends to be very selective about what movies he does. So WB, Warner Brothers, would really need to bring their A game if they were going to pitch to him to try and get him. And by A-game, I also mean money truck. So probably both. Like, bring the good pitch and bring a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
They also likely couldn't afford to have the same trouble or same troubles with this movie's production that have plagued, say, the Batman and the Flash. Because getting Gyllenhaal on board would also open the, you know, he would need to have a solid script and director and a good sizable paycheck to get on board with this one. I am absolutely sure of that. But if, and this is an if they were to get him on board, I'm sure that he would also want to bring in some of his own people, because actors of his with his clout tend to bring certain writers, producers, and directors with them. It's a package deal. You don't just get the one. And if that's the case, it would also open the door to possibly getting Dan Gilroy to come in and be a writer or maybe even direct the Green Lantern Corps film. And if he were to write it, I think that would be really cool too, because and if you're not familiar with the name, he was the writer-director of a cult hit film that I'm pretty sure you can still find on Netflix called Nightcrawler, which also starred Jake Gyllenhaal. And he gave one seriously twisted, scary, yet incredibly hilarious performance in that movie. I very much encourage you to go check out Nightcrawler. It's beautifully shot, too. Dan Gilroy has a real eye for making, for drawing you into those kind of noir-type films. And his script and screenplay were just absolutely amazing. Now, he wouldn't be writing the story or the initial screenplay, but if he were to take, you know, maybe his own swing at it and write a second draft, I either one of those would be good. So I could totally be on board with Jake Gyllenhaal as an older Hal. What do you think, Kelly?
Yeah. I think, you know, from what you've described, I think he's got the same, you know, he's got the acting ability to pull that off, you know.
Now, are there any guys that that kind of spring to mind for you whenever it comes to Hal Jordan? Anybody that you would personally like to see? I mean, that's my list.
It's, you know, the people that you've mentioned, I definitely agree. I think they would all make good. They'd all be good in playing the role of Hal. I think the only one I'd like to add is probably, you know, like you mentioned, Chris Pine. Chris Pine is one that I've, when I heard, you know, talk about him, I definitely could see it, you know, definitely think that he could, you know, do it as well, and like to see him, you know, play the part.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's a good segue into telling people how he could actually do it. Because we'll give you a little context. Back when there was talk of Chris Pine joining the DCEU, it was rumored that he was up for the role of Steve Trevor in Wonder Woman, which he ultimately took, and that he was also being considered for Hal Jordan in Green Lantern, or in Green Lantern Corps. It didn't actually have that name at that time. Well, it may have had that name at that time. But in any case, his name was brought up in both conversations. And when he ultimately took the Steve Trevor part, a lot of people were like, well, that's it. He won't be Hal Jordan. But Wonder Woman takes place in World War I. And it's very likely that we will not be seeing Steve Trevor after this movie. Because, well, I don't know that anybody from World War I is still alive. That's 100 years. And he would be a man in his 30s, in his like mid-30s or so, when this movie takes place. So, yeah, Steve Trevor would have died of old age by now. But I am reasonably sure that Steve Trevor may have had family. And in my mind, if they really wanted to go there, Steve Trevor could have had a daughter who would, you know, or a son. Like, it could go a couple of different generations. But somewhere in there, Hal Jordan could be related to Steve Trevor as a great-great-grandchild.
Yeah.
Or a great-great-grandchild. Or who knows? Like, it's, you see what I'm saying? Like, he could easily be related, still have the name Hal Jordan because, well, he could be related to Steve Trevor on his mother's side.
Mm-hmm.
And that military background would make sense because Steve was military, and there's a military family tradition in the Jordan household. So any way you'd like to slice it, he could still be Hal Jordan if they really mm-hmm. wanted to work it that way. You just wouldn't be able to put Steve Trevor back into any of these movies. But honestly, I don't think you necessarily need him.
Yeah.
Past the first one, like past the first film, you don't. It's just like, you know, Captain America had Peggy Carter in his first movie. And mm-hmm. we all know that Peggy Carter is the love of Steve Rogers' life. She was it for him.
Yeah.
He will eventually, you know, move on, whatever. But if he had his choice, he knows that that Peggy would be it. But Peggy was going to die of old age. And
yeah.
Where Steve wasn't. Just like, you know, Diana does not age. Mm-hmm. But Steve Trevor does. So I'm just saying that's how you could possibly work still having Chris Pine play Hal Jordan. He will have concluded his time as Steve Trevor, and you know, there's your possibility. That is my harebrained idea of how to make Chris Pine be both Steve Trevor and Hal Jordan. So there you have it, folks. Controversial, attitudinal. Let me know your thoughts. Hit me up on Twitter on that one, at Russell_Sellers on Twitter. And you can also join our Facebook group, the Place to Be Nation Comics group. You can search that. You can find us. We'll add you to the group. It's open forum. Come on in. Tell me how crazy my idea is. I would love to hear all of you guys' thoughts on that one. But it's time to move on quickly from that and get to other casting in this movie, because there's a second lead in this film, John Stewart, who is going to be good to play him. Now, I want to go ahead and mention this name, Leon Jones, who is a British actor who was in Attack the Block. If you guys remember, we mentioned Joe Cornish in the first half of the show as a potential director, and this guy is kind of why I thought that might work. Because the little bit I've seen of him in Attack the Block, he had some really great moments. And he's a virtual unknown, and that's why I think that he'd probably be hungry to show off some skills, you know, to have that breakout role. And like his other two Attack the Block co-stars who've gone on to bigger franchises and shown off some range, I think this guy is a star waiting to happen. He just needs the right role. And John Stewart could easily be it. And if they're going for an origin story, as is being reported, then a younger John Stewart only makes sense. And I think that he could be another one of those that, you know, kicks off a really good franchise or makes a name for himself. So, but like I said, virtual unknown. What do you think about a basically an unknown actor taking on that role, Kelly?
Again, less like we're talking about the director. I mean, it's a bold move, and possibly, you know, could possibly be a good thing and you know, be great. But at the same time, Warner Brothers and the powers that be, they're going to try to want a sure thing. They're going to, they're going to want somebody that they know will bring people into the theater. But I mean, you look at Hugh Jackman was virtually an unknown before he took on the role. I mean, they gave the Wolverine role to him, mm-hmm. and you know, he's a great example of an unknown, for the most part, getting this really big movie role. And look what it's done for him, and look what he's done for the character. I mean, it. And they had other people they were thinking about. I mean, at the time to cast, but they gave it to him, and they took a chance, and it has paid off, and continues to pay off.
It really does.
And it, you know, like I said, I would have no problem with him doing that, but you know, when you think about it realistically, I don't think Warner Brothers is going to want to do that. They're going to want somebody with some star power.
You had one that you wanted to name out there. Who do you think's got the star power to carry it?
I think you know his name. I don't know his actual name, but he plays John Diggle on Arrow. I think you would be spot on, perfect for John Stewart. Yeah.
That actor's name is David Ramsey.
And, yeah, I mean he's excellent.
I would have no issues with that. If they were able to get him to come in and play John Stewart, hell yes. But that wasn't the name I was thinking of. I know that you got another one that you that you were a fan of that I was not. So go ahead and throw that one out there.
Tyrese Gibson, I thought would be a good. But then again, you know, I've only seen him in one or two films, and you know. You're a better, you know, you critique actors and such on a different level than I do. And I think, you know, for the most part, for the better, I think, you know, because I let some people slide on things and you're like, no, that was a really bad performance and, you know, can't do it. Can't stand behind it, you know.
You're right that I will not stand behind a choice of Tyrese, although he is on a lot of people's lists. A lot of people really like him a lot, and he campaigned for the role at one mm-hmm. time. He's been pretty quiet about it lately, and with any luck he'll stay that way. But
yeah.
But I digress. But I'm with you on David Ramsey. I like him a lot, and if it weren't for Arrow, and if he were just a little bit younger, I would be like, cast him immediately. And but I don't want to take him away from Arrow either, because he's kind of the, like we were
yeah.
talking about off air, he's part of that holy trinity of Arrow, of Oliver, Diggle, and Felicity. You mm-hmm. got to have these three in the show, or it doesn't work on the same level. So that's the downside of casting him. It would have to be in his off season from Arrow. And I don't know what he likes to do in his off season, but if that were to work out, then yep. But anyway, on to another name that I'd like to throw out there, a guy who's also still virtually an unknown, but he has played some pretty iconic roles, is an actor named Stephan James. He played Jesse Owens in the recent biopic Race. And for those of you who may not be familiar with this, Jesse Owens was an Olympic runner from Alabama who raced in what is called Hitler's Olympics. It was the Olympics that were held in Germany during World War II. And he not only competed but won gold. He is an Alabama treasure. He is one of the most well-known Alabama athletes in history. He also played with yet another Alabama connection. He played John Lewis in the movie Selma and gave a very good performance there as well. He's got the ability to play that kind of stoic, no-nonsense, and very driven character that John Stewart is known to be. He's got a strong and quiet calm to him that embodies the qualities of the character, but he can also let loose with some real fury when he needs to. So in my mind, he should be a strong contender for the role. He might actually be my number. Like if I'm looking at the names that I've got written down for this role, I really feel like, Stephan James might be, my number one draft pick for John Stewart. He hasn't done a movie like this before. Looking at his resume, there doesn't seem to be anything like that. He seems very grounded, in movies based in reality. That seems to be the draw, but I think that he would actually, he could be very good for this. It would be a big diversity thing for him, like to change up his resume a bit. Kelly, have you seen either one of those movies, Race or Selma?
No, I hadn't. But I'll definitely look them up.
Yeah, definitely do that. Both of those movies are very, very good. One other name, this is one I won't spend a lot of time on this guy because I don't know that he would necessarily be the best choice, but I also don't know that I'm going to get his name correct because he is not American, but his name is Deo Okinyo. Arkinye? I don't know how you say his last name. But anyway, he played the character of Thresh in The Hunger Games. And I remember him standing out to me because he had this, like, he had a Green Lantern-like quality to him. In that, even though he was supposed to be taking out other competitors, he had this very protective nature. He would put himself between a big threat and something that was much smaller. And something about that just really stuck out to me. And
yeah,
just his way of carrying himself. And he also, for those who may not be that familiar with Hunger Games, maybe you know, maybe you saw Terminator Genesis, maybe you're one of the few. He played the grown-up Danny Dyson in Terminator Genesis. And, well, I don't think that, well, since his character died in the Hunger Games series and that series is over, and Terminator is getting a full reboot now, I don't think they're going to be calling him up for any future projects there. So I think that if there's an open casting call for Jon Stewart, he should go try out. He should go read for that role. I think that he'd be, he has the potential to be that. I don't know that he would necessarily take it immediately, but there's potential there in him. Kelly, were you familiar with either of those films, Hunger Games or Terminator Genesis?
Yeah, I saw them.
Now, I don't know if you remembered this guy at all. I mean, he wasn't a big standout, I don't think, in either film.
Yeah. I don't really. But then again, I mean, those films weren't that memorable to me as far as, you know.
Yeah. Well, he was only in the, I believe he was only in the first one because he died in the first Hunger Games movie.
Yeah.
But then he, like I said, he played the grown-up version of Danny Dyson in Terminator Genesis. But I digress. It would also be kind of cool to have him in the movie if they were going to have him have a meeting with, or if the character of Jon Stewart were to ever be in the same room as the character who plays Cyborg's father in Batman v Superman, because he that actor also played Miles Dyson in Terminator 2, which I thought was a nice little Easter egg. But I digress. In any other case, I got one more name on my list of potential Jon Stewarts, and that is Trevante Rhodes. And that name also probably doesn't sound all that familiar to people, but it could after this in the next year or so. He's made small appearances in some big things. Like, he was in Westworld recently. He was in the Oscar-nominated movie Moonlight. And he's also in the main cast of the upcoming Predator sequel / reboot that's being directed by Shane Black. Now, he doesn't have a lot of experience in being a lead. He's mostly a guy who plays a support role in a lot of the films he's in. But I think it'd be interesting for him to graduate on up to the potential lead position or a co-lead position. And he's got the look too. Like, whenever you see this guy on screen, you're going to be like, yeah, he could totally pull this off. He's still pretty young. He's in shape. And with Predator, he's going to be doing a big action movie that will be something that he hasn't done a lot of up to now, but this would be a good experience. And if he and Shane Black get along, Shane Black is another name that I wouldn't mind throwing into contention to be a Green Lantern Corps director. Loved what he did in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, and I know, well, Kelly, you may not like this, but he was the director of Iron Man 3.
Well, for all those Marvel folks out there that think Marvel, all the, you know, Marvel can't do anything wrong, Iron Man 3, come on. Come on, that was a big steaming pile of lead.
This is going to be
gross.
This is going to be the new battle between Kelly and Greg, Iron Man 3. They've made peace over Mon-El, but this hostility's renewed. Shots fired.
Iron Man 3 is a huge abortion of monumental proportion. I mean, just it's right up there with, you know. Well, I mean, I'm going to get flack for this too, but I mean, the first Thor film wasn't anything to sneeze at. I mean, it was neat, but it wasn't like, you know. I mean, people want to shit on the DC films, but I mean, come on. Right. Marvel films, not all of them are, you know, knocked out of the park. So, you know.
I can't say a whole lot negative about Thor because I like both of those movies pretty well. And I actually do enjoy Iron Man 3. But you're not the first person I've heard to say that, to say that it was absolutely awful and they can't stand it. But Shane Black as a director, I think, is actually pretty good with the whole buddy comedy thing. I absolutely love his movie Kiss Kiss Bang Bang that he did with Robert Downey Jr. and Val Kilmer.
Yeah, that was a good film.
That is a fantastic noir comedy that makes me think Shane Black would be a really good choice for Green Lantern Corps. And I don't think that he's going to be working with Marvel anymore. It doesn't seem like they've been making his phone ring. So, wrap up the Predator, and if he's got nothing else on his plate, maybe at least talk about it. Have a meeting with Jeff Johns and see what you guys can come up with. Couldn't hurt. It's a dinner meeting.
Yeah.
Or a brunch. You never know. I don't know how they do things in Burbank. I don't live there. But anyway, them's the choices that we've thrown out for John Stewart and Hal Jordan. Now, I think it's pretty clear, or at least it's very likely, that the villain of this movie is going to wind up being Sinestro. I think that's the best route to go, personally.
Yeah.
I know some folks want to see Hal and Sinestro being, you know, being friends, like showing that side of their relationship, and I think you still can. I think you just have to show it in like flashback sequences or maybe in something where John is trying to find out more about Hal, trying to find out why he is the way he is. Maybe some of this, maybe the fall of Sinestro is chronicled in the Book of Oa, and that's how John finds out about it when he's trying to learn why Hal acts the way he does. And that could show, you know, scenes of Hal and Sinestro being friends, actually, like, having a good rapport with each other. And I would kind of want Sinestro to be around for a couple of films. I wouldn't want them to do a one and done with him, you know?
Yeah.
I would want them to have Sinestro, maybe not as the villain of the second film, but definitely keep him around for a potential third. But have him there. Like, don't be quick to kill off the villains. Let them stick around. And like I've said many a time, your film is only as good as your villain. If you don't have a good villain, you are not going to have a good movie. And the first Green Lantern Corps, or the first Green Lantern movie, kind of proves that. Like, that is a well-documented example of crappy villain, crappy movie. But it's all in the performance. Who can be a good Sinestro? And I got three names on my list that I think would be perfect. Any one of these guys could do it, and I'd be jumping for joy if they get it. First up, Giancarlo Esposito. Now, that name is going to sound very familiar to big TV fans out there because he played Gus on Breaking Bad, and he played Captain Tom Neville on the short-lived NBC post-apocalyptic sci-fi show Revolution. And it was that show, actually, Revolution, that made me think, this guy is Sinestro. That cold, calculating, aristocratic snob personality. He embodies it. He is that. I mean, he's probably not that in real life. I don't know the guy. He's probably very, you know, nice, charming fellow. But on screen, you can't tell me that that guy wouldn't be a good Sinestro.
Yeah.
Kelly, I know you've probably seen at least some of Breaking Bad.
I've watched the entire series. So, yeah, I think you definitely I could get behind that pick.
That guy, Sinestro. I would love to see. I would especially love to see him and Chris Pine trading barbs back and forth. I bet they would have incredible chemistry on screen.
Yeah,
I could see it. I'd be shocked if they didn't. But I could see him. I could see him working with any of the guys that we named as Hal. I'd love to see him and Jensen Ackles trade back and forth. I bet that'd be fun. But we'll get through these kind of quickly. My next pick is a guy that you may not be as familiar with, but his name is Rufus Sewell. He is also currently on the Amazon show The Man in the High Castle. Plays a very Sinestro-esque character there, a guy who is definitely on the wrong side, but it feels like he's on the wrong side for the right reasons, if that makes any sense. Yes, he plays a Nazi officer. And it's a testament to this show that a Nazi officer like him, who's done some horrible things, could actually gain some of my sympathies whenever it comes to his family. Because he plays a family man, too. And when it comes to like protecting his wife and children, he puts them above even his duty to the Reich, which absolutely endears him to, I mean, it's a testament to the writing, but it endears him to the audience to show that he may be a monster, but he's also still human. And I think, and for those fans that might not be familiar with that show, may not know who I'm talking about. Maybe you remember the cult classic sci-fi film Dark City, where he played the lead character of that film. Good bit younger back then, because that was in the 90s. But he's another one of those characters that another one of those character actors I think would pull off Sinestro very well. He doesn't have the same screen presence as Giancarlo Esposito has, but he's still a strong actor. I like what I've seen out of him, and I think that he would make a strong case there. Kelly, what do you think about that guy?
Yeah, I think he could. I think he'd be a pretty decent pick, you know, overall. And I think I like, you know, the Gus character a little bit more. I think he's going to be my, you know, my pick for who I'd like, you know.
Yeah, he's a hard one to top.
Yeah.
He's a really difficult one to top in terms of that level of performance and that level of menace that he can bring to a role. But I got somebody who might be able to do it. My third entry, Jason Isaacs. Now, some folks might not know that name right off, but I guarantee you Harry Potter fans know who he is. That's Lucius Malfoy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that's not the role that makes me think of him as Sinestro. No. The role that makes me think of him as Sinestro is one that he did way before he was in Harry Potter. And that's when he played Colonel William Tavington in the Mel Gibson Heath Ledger film, The Patriot. I mean, say what you will about the movie, it being just the Americanized Braveheart, which Braveheart also was. But when you see him play that character, he is everything that I described about Giancarlo, he is that as well. That British officer who makes it his life's mission to tear down the American uprising and especially Gibson's character's family. I mean, you can't say this guy was just pure driven evil through and through. But he was also always upright and capable of killing you in seconds because he's an expert in human chess. He continues to be one of the most versatile actors in Hollywood and could easily capture the spirit and essence of Sinestro. And to me, I feel like what Marvel did with, say, Loki, by like taking him and elevating him to this this iconic status that he now enjoys, I kind of think that maybe DC and Warner Brothers should consider doing that same thing for Sinestro. Like, elevate him to that level. It's like, get him there. And make your, like, if you wanted to build towards, say, a Sinestro Corps War movie, build it on the back of it being a Justice League crossover film. Like, make that your big, like, your big crescendo.
Mm-hmm.
But start building it in Green Lantern. And,
right.
And build him like they did Loki and Thor, and then graduated him to being the main villain of Avengers. Do that same thing with Sinestro.
Yeah.
Build him to that. But then you could take it further if you really wanted to get ballsy and try to build towards Blackest Night, but my God, you'd need to lay a lot of groundwork for that one.
Yeah.
And don't rush that shit. Just concentrate on building up Hal, John, and Sinestro, make people care about them, make one good solid hit film, just focused on that. And, you know, hint at the possibility of things to come later, but you don't have to get to all of it immediately. That's something that, I mean, we've preached it for a while now. Just tell a solid story.
Mm-hmm.
Those are my casting ideas. Both of our casting ideas for Hal, John, Sinestro. One crackpot theory or crackpot idea about how Chris Pine could still wind up playing Hal Jordan. But Kelly, when it comes down to it, what is the absolute number one thing that this movie needs to do in order to not be a repeat of 2011?
Well, I mean, I think we've kind of already said it. You just need to have a good, and by I say simple story, not, you know, simple as not, you know, just a, basically you just want to tell a good story and you don't need to just throw everything at you. You know, you just need to kind of put a story out there that is kind of short and sweet and to the point, you know, and you can tell a good story and not just overwhelm your audience like the Green Lantern film did. And I think that's really what I want to see in this upcoming film is just a good solid story. You don't have to overcomplicate things. I mean, if they kind of follow the same aspect that Guardians of the Galaxy did, I think they can really do a good film and have a good story to tell.
I am right there with you. It's got to just be focused, you know, and I think the other key word is balanced. Like, as we've seen wild swings in both directions from Warner Brothers in making their superhero films. It's either way too light and silly, or it's incredibly dark and morbid and almost like to the point of being depressing. And what they really need is just to find a balance in there. Like, you want to tell some dark stories, that's cool. Nothing wrong with that. You know, and some of their characters lend themselves to that. Like, Batman is certainly a dark character that should be, you know, in that realm. But, I mean, there should be some levity in there, too.
Yeah.
And with a character like Hal Jordan, he's naturally funny. There has to be that level of humor throughout the film. And I mean, it's not like the movies are like the DC movies up to this point are just devoid of humor. They're not. They actually have a good bit in there. It's just, it's not balanced well. There's so much more like heavy handedness that goes into it. And it's like, maybe they should lighten up a little bit and not go so much into that territory and try to just tell a superhero story and not be so worried about, you know, trying to be overly complex. I mean, yeah, you want to separate yourself from what Disney and Marvel are doing, but you got to admit there is something to the idea of doing a more simplistic take, like a more straightforward, and as has been said in other shows and on this one, the safe picture. And by safe, we mean something that's actually going to definitely make money.
Yeah.
But a lot of these movies up to now have, they honestly have felt like they've kind of alienated part of their audience. And that's not something you need to do. You've got to get a broader appeal. And Green Lantern is, I think we can just go ahead and say it, it's already going to be a tough sell.
Yeah.
Because of the 2011 film. That's still fresh in people's minds. Even though when this movie comes out, if it comes out in 2020 as is currently scheduled, that won't even be, it'll been like 9 years since the first Green Lantern movie, and that sounds crazy. That'll make you feel a little old, doesn't it?
Yeah.
9 years by the time this next one comes out. I mean, they didn't even wait that long to reboot Batman.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not talking about between Nolan's trilogy and Batman v Superman. I'm talking about from 1997 to 2005 for Batman and Robin and Batman Begins. And Batman Begins wasn't even a mega hit because people were trepidatious about going to see another Batman movie.
Mm-hmm.
As they had every right to be after Batman and Robin. But I think my greatest fear for this movie would be that it comes out, it flops again, and that'll just be it. I mean, we saw what happened with Batman, a guaranteed moneymaker. Even though Batman and Robin was bad, they felt like they could come back to it eventually and make more Batman. Because he's that popular. He's Batman, for God's sake. But with Green Lantern, if they don't get a hit out of this one, I would just about guarantee we never see a Green Lantern film ever again. We may never see Green Lantern in a film again.
Yeah.
That's how much is likely riding on this movie doing well. But luckily for them, they're not the ones under pressure to get this going properly. So that's going to be on other filmmakers, but that's a topic for another time. And I'm glad that we were able to talk about all this. And, you know, we hope you guys have enjoyed hearing us talk about all these crazy happenings with Green Lantern. And maybe you think some of our ideas are good. Maybe you think they're absolute crap. We want to hear it either way. Tell us, hit us up on Twitter, on Facebook. We want to hear your thoughts on all of this. And while you're checking out our podcast, you know, go check out some of the other stuff that's going on right now on Hartile and Fanboys, Geek and Sassy, Todd Weber's Conversation Comics. Got a great series going with Tim Capel over on that show about the Claremont and Byrne era of X-Men. I highly encourage people to go and listen to that one. They're epically long, but they are epically great too. And you know, there are, I want to give a quick shout out to our newest podcast on the Place to Be Nation pop feed, the Dadcast, with JT Rosero, and his, various partners that he's had on that show so far. I'm not a father, but I got to tell you guys, I love the hell out of that show. I thought that it was just so well done. It's so entertaining. And we hope that you have been entertained and maybe enlightened a little bit here. And in the coming month in March. It's going to be all Wolverine all the time. That's right. We're going to be talking some Wolverine stuff. We're going to be joined by a special guest on our next episode. Mr. Ben Morse will be coming back. That's right. Mr. Ben Morse from Marvel is going to be here to do a Guide to Wolverine episode with us. And that, really looking forward to that one. And of course, later in the month of March, we're going to be taking a look at the Mist and the Maligned Wolverine and the X-Men cartoon. And of course, in our next episode, we will also be kind of previewing and talking up a little bit about the new movie Logan. So I hope you guys will come back for that one. Thanks again for joining us on another episode of Seller's Points. This has been the Speculator's Corner, and we will see you guys next time. Say bye, Kelly.
See ya.
creature from the east. Sam's teeth on the dictaphone, hit it in its funny bone. That's where they expect it at least. It's a new moon chaperone standing in the corner, watching the young girls dance. And some fresh old moonstone was messing with his clothes on the mind in Morrowbeck. Another runner in the night, blinded by the light. Wrapped up like a douche, another runner in the night, blinded by the light. Wrapped up like a douche, another runner in the night,
in the dark with the monsters, the eyes.
Wrapped up like a douche, another runner in the night,
with a border on my shoulder, being the kind of owner I attract.
Is gonna make it through the night.